President Joe Biden was in Atlanta yesterday making the case for a Democratic effort to expand voting rights.
I will not yield. I will not flinch. I will defend the right to vote. Our democracy against all enemies, foreign and, yes, domestic.
After the speech, though, some voting rights advocates say the president isn't doing enough to prioritize the issue. Republicans, on the other hand, say the changes in Congress would go too far. The Week in Washington, we'll look at that story and more, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What are some of the voting and election reforms you would support? Should we make Election Day a federal holiday? Do you want to see a minimum amount of time required for all states to allow early voting? How about those drop boxes? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ginger Gibson is Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital. Ginger, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
We heard a little taste of Biden's speech there. Can you tell us a little more what we heard from the president and what stood out to you?
Yeah, the president really leaned hard into his push to try to get Congress to pass a voting bill. To be clear, this is still very unlikely to happen, but we saw Biden give another really strong and resounding endorsement of some action by Congress. The House has passed a number of bills. It's the Senate where things are held up, and particularly because the Senate generally requires 60 votes to pass almost all legislation. Biden also went a step further in his speech on Tuesday and endorsed the Senate abandoning the filibuster, at least for this piece of legislation. And the filibuster, as most of your listeners probably know, is that 60-vote threshold. But to be clear, Democrats don't have the votes to do that either. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Senator Kristen Sinema of Arizona have both said that they won't support changing the rules with just 50 Democrats. So it looks like this is still going to be an effort that is a real uphill battle. And unless Democrats start talking about paring the bills back and finding some compromise with Republicans, it's unlikely that it'll get passed.
Can you remind us of the two main bills on the table that are kind of at the center of all of this?
Yes. So there's two big pieces of legislation that the Senate is still sort of weighing. The first is called the Freedom to Vote Act. And this was a bill that was a pared down version of another bill that passed the House. This was negotiated by Democrats among Democrats to get the support of Senator Joe Manchin. It still does a lot of things in this piece of legislation. It would create lots of national standards, sort of baseline standards, things like the number of early voting days, the ability to register to vote on election day or online or at the DMV, redistricting. It would change some campaign finance laws. It's got a whole lot of stuff in there. Some things that are pretty responsive to bills we saw Republicans pass in the last year, and some things that Democrats have been pushing for a long time. The other piece of legislation is called the John Lewis Voting Act. And this is a much more narrower piece of legislation. It would address a change that was made to the Voting Rights Act of 1965, that sort of landmark legislation that prevented discrimination. The Supreme Court several years ago struck down a portion of that law. In a decision known as Shelby County versus Holder, and a portion of that law known as preclearance, which basically said, if you are a state with a track record of passing discriminatory laws, to change your election laws, you had to get approval from the Department of Justice. The Supreme Court said that the way that those states were selected was not constitutional, and they struck down that part of the law. This new law would create a new system to determine which states are subject to approval from the Department of Justice. And it's probably about 10 states, if this was to be enacted, that would be, or 15 states that would be subject to these rules.
I want to listen to some of the response to President Biden's speech. Here's Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor earlier today.
1 week ago, President Biden gave a January 6th lecture about not stoking political violence. 1 week ago. Yesterday, with the world's largest megaphone, he invoked the literal civil war and said we are on the doorstep of autocracy. Talked about domestic enemies. Rhetoric unbecoming of a president of the United States.
So first of all, what do you think of Senator Leader McConnell's talk about the rhetoric there being overheated?
Yeah, there's a lot of heated rhetoric here. And I think that there's a few things going on. We've heard Senator McConnell increase sort of the volume on his criticism of Democrats discussing changing the filibuster rules over the last few weeks. He's become increasingly critical and really sort of turned up the heat on what he thinks is the wrong move for them to do. His criticism of Biden, I think it's important to remember that while Democrats have painted this voting bill that they've been trying to pass as sort of good for democracy and good for all, Republicans have a lot of longstanding grievances with some elements of this legislation. They fundamentally disagree on how to change the campaign finance system, for example. Republicans think there should be less limits and more disclosure. Democrats think there should be more limits and more disclosure. But I think that what we're seeing here is a very partisan bill. It has not gone through any level of scrutiny that would make it or negotiations that would make it in the least bit bipartisan. This is something that Democrats want and Republicans have not wanted for a long time. And so Biden was talking about a partisan piece of legislation. And I think we heard a very partisan response from Mitch McConnell.
Talking to Ginger Gibson from NBC News Digital, looking at some of the top stories in national politics right now, looking at efforts by Democrats to pass their voting rights bills. Big speech by the president yesterday making the case for them. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on that. Let's bring on a caller now. James is with us on the road. James, hi.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, James?
I wanted to bring up that I heard on radio the other day where a few years ago, Mitch McConnell talked about ending the filibuster, and Chuck Schumer was completely against it then. And now he's all for it.
James, thanks for the call. And the Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, has effectively, I think James is about right there, has changed his position when it comes to this voting rights bill, when it comes to the filibuster, Ginger.
And I mean, I think that's part of what Joe Manchin's argument here is in favor of the filibuster. Democrats, it wasn't that long ago. It was 2017. It was just 4 years ago that Republicans held the majority in the House and the Senate and the White House. And Democrats relied heavily upon that 60 vote threshold to block legislation that otherwise President Trump would have signed into law. And Manchin makes the argument that if they were to change the rules now for Democrats, it's not like Republicans are going to say, well, next time we're in control, we'll go back to the rules we had before. No, they're going to do the same thing that Democrats are doing now. And that's part of the argument here. And I think it's also important to remember that while Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are very vocal in their opposition to changing the filibuster rules, they're not alone. We know that there are several lawmakers in the Senate, Democrats, who think that the same concerns that they would be giving Republicans power, much more power than they would have otherwise in a few years, possibly in as little as 3 years, and that they're concerned about that. They're just not being as vocal about their concerns as their colleagues are.
James, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Ginger, we focused so far on the response from Republicans. There are some voting rights advocates who want to see these bills passed who are critical of President Biden for, they say, not doing enough. What kind of things are we hearing?
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of frustration among voting rights advocates, among those who are really lobbying strongly for this legislation, that they feel that President Biden just hasn't done enough to get this legislation across the finish line. They argue that had Biden made this his number one priority when he took office, had he put all of his political capital into this instead of the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better bill, which still hasn't passed, that they might have been more capable of getting something done, that instead he focused on these spending bills. And then because of that, because he didn't put all of his political capital into this voting bill, he didn't do enough. I mean, this is a really complicated dynamic. I mean, it's possible that the president could have made this his number one priority, talked about it every day since he took office, and still it wouldn't have passed because there's just fundamental disagreement in the Senate over it. So it's a difficult road for the president to have to navigate. And I think we're really seeing that in the criticism that he's facing from within his own party, that they feel like he hasn't done enough, but there may just not be anything more that he could do.
Talking to Ginger Gibson, Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital, with us today to look at some of the top stories in Washington. You can join in at 800-642-1234. The push for voting rights changes, too much, not enough. What do you think? 800-642-1234. And coming up, efforts to get more COVID tests out, especially to schools. Are you a caregiver who's struggled to find a test for your child? If you work at a school, what does the need for testing look like from your perspective? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Right now, we're picking up our look at some of the top stories in national politics. Ginger Gibson is our guest from NBC News Digital. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 if you have thoughts on the efforts to pass new voting laws in Congress, or on the effort by the federal government to get COVID tests out, especially to schools. And coming up, we'll talk about the latest contacts between U.S. and Russia trying to dial things down around Ukraine. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ginger, what are we hearing as far as details on this plan from the Biden administration aimed at getting these COVID-19 tests to schools around the country?
That's right. The president has really struggled with testing during this latest surge in COVID. They came out in December and really argued that they were going to test to stay, that schools were going to stay open by increasing the amount of testing. And even if a kid had been exposed, they tested negative, they could stay in school. But the problem became no one could get a test. And so you couldn't really test to stay. And so the White House has now said that they're going to ship millions, 10 million a month, to schools to help them implement these testing programs. That's a lot of tests. And we're really seeing a logistical challenge in its infancy for the White House. I think they're talking about millions of tests mailed to people, individual people at their homes, in addition to now millions of tests going out to schools. And so they're contracting, they're trying to find people to send these tests out, but whether they get them out in a way that is able to have them utilized and make a difference is still to be determined.
Right. And there's about 950,000 K-12 students in Wisconsin alone. 10 million sounds like a big number, but there's lots of kids, lots of staff and teachers for that matter. Is there a view that this number is going to be enough, even assuming they can get them out there?
I mean, I think that's one of the big questions. How many tests do you need, especially if you're regularly or routinely testing? There are some districts in the country that have set up regular testing regimens, some in Georgia and the Atlanta area, where they're testing students, all the students, twice a week. And those schools have had to acquire millions of tests on their own to be able to do this. So it's a real challenge for these districts to try to find a way to implement this. And I think we're going to continue to see questions about, is it enough tests? Are they getting there quickly enough? Do the tests work adequately? There's been a lot of questions about whether these rapid tests are catching the Omicron variant quickly enough. And I think those questions are still going to be lingering for the coming weeks, unless by some magic, COVID sort of slinks away on us here in the coming months.
In our next conversation, by the way, today we're going to talk about some of the science and the practical advice when it comes to these rapid tests. Ginger, this is the week in Washington, so let's talk about some of the politics here. Biden administration getting criticism for not being ready for this surge in demand for tests after a year in office. Some polling showing, I think for the first time, disapproval of the Biden administration's handling of COVID in particular, seeing less support than disapproval at this point. How big a political issue is this getting to be for the White House?
This is a very big political issue for the White House. The president's approval in a Quinnipiac poll that came out today was 33%. And that's pretty abysmal. That basically means only your real strident partisans are approving of your job. And part of those numbers, too, was a real indictment of how the handling of COVID at this point. People are less forgiving. They feel like we've been at this for a while, that he's been at this for a year, that they should be figuring it out. And the logistical struggles that are facing Americans, the inability inability to get a test, the inability to send their kids to school. I think that's really weighing on people. Politically, the White House is looking at November of this year when midterms happen, when states are going to be considering who to send to Congress, when Wisconsin's going to be considering whether to return Ron Johnson to the Senate. And I think that there's a lot of concern among Democrats and maybe a little bit in the White House, even if they won't admit it, that these numbers are really going to weigh on them when they get to Election Day in November. People remember if they had two miserable weeks at home with their kids because they couldn't get a test to figure out if they could go back to school. And those are the things that inform people's decisions when they show up on Election Day.
Talking to Ginger Gibson, Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital, checking out some of the big stories in national news and national politics. And let's go international now. Ginger, U.S. engaging in talks with Russia, some State Department officials involved in this. Why now? What's going on?
Been watching this very difficult situation on the border between Russia and Ukraine. The Russians have assembled their troops there on the border, and there is clearly international concern that the Russians will invade Ukraine, trying to take over this sovereign nation. We've already seen their willingness to do so in the Crimea region, and a lot of concern that this is going to happen. So we've seen President Biden push back at the Russians, giving a pretty strong threat to their President Putin. And then we saw these talks this week with the U.S. and some NATO allies in Brussels with the Russians. And they didn't really seem that productive. There were no promises from the Russians that they would vacate that border, that they would return their troops to their barracks, as the U.S. had said. And there's clearly some concern being raised by the Americans after these talks that they are worried that the Russians will use these meetings as a pretext to then invade Ukraine, that they'll go back and tell their people, look, we tried a diplomatic solution. It didn't work. We have no choice but to use our military. There's been a lot of, from what we understand, propaganda in Russia, arguing to their people that the Ukrainians are really the one to blame for the escalation. So there has clearly been a message to the people there that they believe that military action is necessary.
What have we heard from the Biden administration and NATO allies when it comes to how they might respond if this were to happen, if Russia were to invade Ukraine, more of Ukraine, I should say.
Yeah, the U.S. and NATO have threatened some really strong sanctions against the Russians. They've pretty consistently in the past sanctioned Russian and Russian oligarchs or the wealthy part of the nation that have engaged in activity that the U.S. hasn't approved. They've limited their access to the world banking system. But there was a suggestion last year that the U.S. and its NATO allies could completely cut Russia off from the world banking system. And that would be a really crippling economic sanction to impose. It's kind of the rare sanction that we use. It's been used in very few cases and would probably have reverberating diplomatic effects if they were to do so.
So what are you watching for next on U.S.-Russian negotiations here?
I think we're going to be looking to see what these talks, how they're depicted to the Russian people, and what Ukrainians are saying about this, and then further conversations between the U.S. and Russia. There have been these side channels where, for example, President Biden and President Putin spoke a few weeks ago. Do those types of conversations continue? Putin also knows that invading Ukraine is going to come with a lot of pushback on the international stage. And so he's having to weigh that, and we'll be looking to see what his relations with particularly Germany, where they sell a lot of oil, and other European nations where they have strong trading ties, what those look like.
I want to take our last couple of minutes, Ginger, to look ahead at this year's midterms. We're almost exactly 10 months off. 10 months can fly right by, but in the political world, it's a long time, too. What are you looking at right now to get a sense of where things are going in the midterms?
Yeah, I think we should be looking very closely at how Republicans or Democrats are talking about issues that affect people in their houses and their families. So inflation is a big issue. The labor market is a big issue. How they're handling shortages, how people are viewing supply chain issues. I think those are the things that affect people. And people are, if we get to November and the price of milk has still been climbing for 11 months, or the price of bread has become exorbitant, or you can't get things at the store because of supply chain issues, that's going to be a real issue for Biden. I also will be watching closely how Democrats handle some of the culture war issues. You look at the Virginia governor's race, Republicans talked about education in a way that reverberated with parents and that really cost Democrats lots of votes. And I think that the biggest lesson to be learned there was that Democrats can't just write off some of these culture discussions that Republicans are having. They need to have answers. They need to be able to explain their positions. And they can't just yell, you know, oh, that's a dog whistle, and expect voters to just write off what Republicans are saying.
And in the shorter term horizon, Ginger, what story are you following this next week?
I'm going to be watching very closely to see what happens in the Senate. This voting bill is just really unlikely to pass. But if Democrats want to go back to the bill that could pass, which is the Build Back Better or a smaller version of it, it's not going to behoove them to get the last few votes they need to get across the finish line. Particularly Senator Manchin, really upset and mad at his leadership. That's not going to incentivize him to want to cooperate on other pieces of legislation. So those dynamics are going to be really important in how Schumer and Democrats handle the Senate in the next week.
Ginger, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Ginger Gibson, Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital. She was with us today for a look at some of the top stories from Washington.